Thank you. Please be seated. Court is ready to hear argument from petitioners in Martin v. Ameren.
On behalf of the court, Mr. Walter Snyder will present argument for the petitioners in the interest of the court. So 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. There is a body of law in real estate law that exists that distinguishes property disputes and trespasser tri-title cases. As we all know, trespasser tri-title cases are a creature of statute, and the rights of the substantive rights of the parties are governed by those statutes. With regard to a boundary dispute, if the case is truly a boundary dispute and not a trespasser tri-title, there are other avenues available than the trespasser tri-title statute to bring that case.
What's a little quick taxonomy by which generalist could decide which of these two categories a dispute over who owned what falls into?
A generalist could decide if there is no dispute but for the physical location of the property, then it is a boundary dispute. If there's no dispute as to title,
so no problem in the chain of title.
There's no problem in the chain of title.
Where this line is.
It's just physically, where is the line located on the ground? Then it's a boundary dispute.
Does it matter that the claims are overlapping? It seems to be a large point made in the briefing that there are no overlapping claims here. What difference does that make?
In this particular case, there are no overlapping claims to the properties by title description. There is a difference in the boundary line in this case. But the difference,
but would it matter whether it was a title dispute or a boundary dispute, whether the claims were overlapping, is what I'm asking.
Well, it doesn't matter if the claims were overlapping, but if the case is truly a boundary dispute, then there are avenues of recovery that are available to the plaintiff in the lower court that are not available in a trespass title case.
Why should the rules be different?
Well, because the legislature made the rule different. In the trespass tri-title situation, the statute as set forth in the property code does not allow for the recovery of attorney fees. And for what there's really no reason why there couldn't be a recovery of attorney fees, except that the legislature simply did not include that in the statute.
Why should this court say, well, we recognize that's the legislative policy there,
yes, sir,
but we're going to allow attorney fees in boundary disputes?
Well, attorney fees are allowed in boundary disputes if they are a creature and brought as a pursuant to the declaratory judgment statute.
But why? Why would you have a different policy for the two different types of claims?
Well, my personal opinion, there probably should not be two different policies. I believe in a real estate case, if a person whose title is weak, because in a trespasser tri-title situation, typically it's an adverse possessor, someone who does not have a clear title to the property. And that person brings a trespasser tri-title case, and the only issue is the resolution of title. In that case, if that person is unsuccessful, then he does not have to pay the defendant's attorney fees. In a boundary dispute case, the courts have consistently allowed these cases to be brought as a declaratory judgment action, the end result being because there's really no damages in these cases. I mean, in this case, we had a fence torn down, but there's no damage to rebuilding a cyclone fence. But the damage is the expense to bringing the case because they're expert intensive. You have a surveyor and you have a title expert. And if a plaintiff, as in this case, has to bring a case not of his own choosing, but because his neighbor tore down his fence and says, I'm claiming that property, I'm tearing your fence down and tossing it in your backyard, then the Martins were obligated, you know, to avail themselves of the court to remedy the situation.
All of that can be true in a trespass and tri-title case. Every one of those facts could be.
The courts acknowledge that a boundary dispute can be brought as a trespass or tri-title suit.
And even as between two neighbors, as you said, property holders, determining the boundary line in effect determines the title as between those two parties. parties, doesn't it?
It can be brought as a trespass or tritile. That
so
is correct.
So how are the two substantively different?
Sir?
How are the two then substantively different?
Well, the two are substantively different
in the court.
Because in a boundary dispute, title is not an issue. Title to the property is not an issue. The only dispute is the physical location of the property on the ground. In a trespass or tritile, you actually have a greater burden of proof because you have to prove title back to the sovereign. If it's not a trespass or tritile case, it's a boundary dispute case, you only have to prove your chain of title, how you arrive title.
Would it be a too simplistic taxonomy to say that a title dispute arises from problems with the deed, whereas a boundary dispute involves conflicting interpretations of a survey?
A title dispute can involve interpretations of deed, and in this case, the boundary dispute, simply, we had the testimony in this case, there was testimony of this land having been established for a period of 35 years by five separate surveyors.
But I guess what we're struggling with is how to distinguish in a simple, straightforward way when something is more about title versus when it's more about survey, more about a boundary. And could we cast that distinction in terms of problems with the deed, ambiguities with the deed, chain of title involving the language of the deed equals title dispute versus conflicting surveys equals boundary dispute?
Yes, ma'am, we could. And in this case, the reason it's not a title dispute is because the Martin's title, there were no discrepancies or deficiencies in the Martin's title. The Martins acquired their property from a man named Nelson, who acquired it from people named Crowell, who acquired it from people named Duffy. His title was in this 10-acre Crowell tract. Mr. Duffy, back in 1901, conveyed this property to Crowell, and then he conveyed it 91 years later to Nelson, who conveyed it to the Martins. Mr. Ammerman, his title went from Duffy to DeVos, and then there were several owners to pass. The testimony from the title examiners and the surveyors stated that by title description, these two properties do not overlap. They abut each other.
Let me take this beyond this case and just pose it this way. If you took that test that I've just sort of put forth and applied it to the Kennedy Foundation case, I believe there was a statement, albeit in dicta in that case, that was a title dispute.
Yes, ma'am, it was.
Now, would that be because determining the waters of the edge of the Laguna Madre would be an interpretation of the deed and therefore it involves title? And it wasn't so much a survey issue. In other words, would that test work to draw a distinction in that case?
In that case, in the foundation case, the issue was the coastal land, and it was an issue of, while there may have been issues of boundary, but it was an issue of title, who physically owned that piece of property.
And so the boundary, determining the title did determine the boundary, but because it required interpretation of the deed, does that make it a title dispute?
It involved the interpretation of a deed, not necessarily, it involved the interpretation of a deed or some instrument of title. In this case, we do have a deed that purports to create a title dispute, but it was a deed that was created by the Ammermans, and it was a title dispute that did not exist prior to the Ammermans' acquisition of their property. When Mr. Ammerman acquired his property, he created a deed that said, I'm putting the west line of my property 30 feet past Mr. Martin's line. He knew where the boundary line was for the Martin tract, and he created a deed that said, I'm creating a line 30 feet east of that. Prior to that time, in the deeds into the Pies, and even the Pies had acknowledged by the grant of an easement to a drainage district the existence of this line. So I think just because you have a deed that needs interpretation does not automatically make it a title dispute.
What did that 30 feet get him, by the way? Was there, I mean, what was advantageous about having the line 30 feet?
Well, that's always something that we really don't know. This 30 feet was about 30 by 200. This was a residential neighborhood. Mr. Martin had acquired a 2.005-acre tract. Mr. Ammerman bought the property next to it, a 1.2-acre tract. He subsequently, as I understand it, has built a house on that. So I guess he was trying to just expand the boundary land of a 1.2-acre tract to a 1.3 or 1.4-acre tract. I don't know of any other difference. But when Mr. Ammerman created that deed, he was aware of Mr. Martin's land, and he was aware that the Martins had bought that property 5 years prior, had obtained a title policy, had obtained a survey, and had actually fenced that property. And that fence had been in place for 5 years. Sometimes in a trespasser tribe title, possession is an issue. In this case, possession was never an issue because Mr. Ammerman never acquired possession of this property. Mr. Martin was 100% in possession at all times. And when Mr. Ammerman tore down the fence, you know, it was my understanding that he did so trying to interrupt, you know, some type of adverse possession claim by Mr. Martin. And that was his sole purpose, as I understand it, for tearing down the fence. And, of course, when he tore down the fence, then it forced Mr. Martin to go to court to get a restraining order.
Mr. Snyder, you're not saying that these two causes of action are mutually exclusive, are you?
No, sir, they're not mutually exclusive. I think a trespasser tribe title case obviously cannot be tried as under the rules of a boundary dispute in a declaratory judgment. It cannot. It can't be done that way.
All right, now, don't you agree that the real issue in this case is how far can you go with a trespass to try title? And at what point in time have you exceeded?
The real issue in this case is the distinction between a pure boundary dispute case and whether or not this case involves questions of title that require it to be a trespass to try title case. The trial court decided that it was a pure boundary dispute case. In fact, the Sixth Court of Appeals decided it was a pure boundary dispute case, but the argument that we have with the Sixth Court of Appeals was because, you know, they said, okay, this is a boundary dispute case because there's no issues of title. The question is the physical location of the land on the ground. But however, it's in the nature of a trespass to try title. And because it's in the nature of a trespass to try title, we're going to delete the award of attorney fees. When they did that, they relied on a case called Eli versus Brindley, which was not a boundary dispute case. It was a trespass to try title case. I think in the context of whether or not a declaratory action is proper, they are mutually exclusive. You can have a boundary dispute case that can be tried as a trespass to try title, but the reverse doesn't work. In a case, can't be both. It can't be a pure boundary dispute case and at the same time be a trespass to try title case. It's basically one or the other with the caveat that if it's a boundary dispute, you still have the right because the court's allowed to bring it as a trespass to try title.
Do you agree with the proposition that trespass to try title action is really a legal action and declaratory judgment type action is an equitable type of nature, and if so, how would that make a difference, or would it make a difference in this case in our decision?
It makes a difference in this case because of whether or not attorney fees, approved and awarded by the trial court, can stand. You know, in a trespass or tri-title case, there just simply is no provision for the recovery of attorney fees. In a declaratory judgment action, it's discretionary, as we know, with the trial court to award or not to award attorney fees. So it makes a difference in the recovery for the parties.
And you also said that I think you added to the list, the laundry list of things that would include trespass to try title, would be possession. For instance, I could see a situation, maybe you could, when a tenant holds over and they get them out of the property.
Yes, sir.
All right. In this particular case, is there any issue about getting possession of the property?
There was never an issue because Mr. Martin maintained possession. He had possession for the 5 years prior to the time this lawsuit was filed. The court granted a restraining order. After hearing, the court granted a temporary injunction. So Mr. Martin remained in possession throughout. Mr. Ammerman was never allowed to acquire possession.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Well, may it please the court, will Mr. Mitch Smith present argument for the respondents.
May it please the court, counsel. I would like to address the possession issue. I think in responding to the Chief Justice, in a generalist viewpoint, possession is the issue. If possession is an issue in the case of the property, it should be properly characterized as a trespass to try title case. If a party is losing property to the benefit of someone else is getting possession of that property, if that is the issue, it's a trespass to try title.
Well, if our call is for the tree that's 30 paces to the right of the rock, and we're not sure which tree that is, or how long the pace is where we each go, I mean, what you have to do is go back and trace your title from Stephen F. Austin.
Well, Your Honor, if it's a trespass to try title case,
I own land next to Judge Heckman, we're not quite sure where the fence should be. Well, whoever wants to bring this to court has got to go back to day one.
Well, you could agree to enter into a boundary agreement. If there is some confusion as to where the legitimate boundary is, you could recognize it and put it down into a boundary agreement. You could bring, I know you wouldn't want to, you could bring an adverse possession claim, which would, if you give the 10-day notice, potentially trigger attorney's fees if you prevail. Or you could bring, as the legislature has always told us to do, a trespass to try title action and set out the statutes in Chapter 22 of the Texas Property Code.
I don't see how possession can be the determinative because in a boundary dispute, both sides here want the 30 feet.
Well, and that's where Mr. Snyder and I disagree. And I think the courts in Brainerd and in Kennedy Memorial and even in Goble say you've got to have a true boundary dispute.
Well, when would you have a boundary dispute in which the parties were not quarreling over possession?
Well, several examples. I don't know if they're the best ones, but they're the best I could come up with since we have this issue. A zoning question. Where do zoning boundaries fall? Easement. Where is the proper location of the easement? For a party to enforce a boundary agreement that's already in place, bring a cause of action under the declaratory.
Let's just say we have adjoining property, and the call is from a metal stake in the northwest corner of some tract. And we go out there, and there are two metal stakes, and they're 5 feet apart. How do we decide, and we have a lawsuit to determine which metal stake governs it? That's just a pure old boundary dispute, isn't it?
Not if title and possession is settled, and that's what the court was talking
about.
And
I don't quarrel with my neighbor's title. He doesn't quarrel with mine. The only question is which stake determines where you draw the line.
If you're not contesting ownership and or possession.
But we are contesting who owns... Who gets to possess that strip? It's going to be determined by which state. Possession is determined by which state, where the fence goes. So possession can't be the test, can it?
I argue possession is a big part of the test. And in that situation, if you are going to relinquish possession, and one party's going
to
get...
You're always going to relinquish possession once the boundary's decided.
Well, then I think that's a title case. And I think that's why everything has become so confusing. It was very simply set out in a trespass to try final action. And amicus brings this up very well. When the courts start allowing parties to just say, oh, I'll just call this a boundary dispute. And it'll even be better if I can just call it a boundary dispute. If I can stick it under the Declaratory Judgments Act, I can get attorney's fees.
That's a whole other issue. I'm just trying... Surely parties can go into court and decide, is it this stake or this stake, without having to prove title back to the sovereign.
Well, and the Plum Court tells us you can do that outside of the formal trespass to try title statute, but you still have to prove sufficient title, some kind of sufficient right to that property. Now, that becomes an issue in this case, and that's why I think this case is better characterized as a title case, because the other party is contesting that ownership and showing that they have better ownership. And at that point, you've got two parties both saying they've got good title to that property, which goes back to the Kennedy Memorial.
But your case basically hinges on whether which markers, physical markers on the ground, you go to.
Right. It's not the situation in Brainerd where the court says you're using correct surveys. It's which is the legal theory that should be used in those surveys.
But this doesn't involve legal theories. This just involves...
It involves the correctness of the surveys. You've got two parties contesting those issues. And I think when you have that situation, as the statutes have set forth, that is a trespass to try title cause
of action. You have to go back all the way back to the sovereign?
You either have to go back to the sovereign, regular train to set title from the sovereign. You prove superior title out of common source, which the Martins did not do either. You prove prior possession, that possession had not been abandoned, and possession was contested here. This was a vacant lot behind the Martins' backyard and the Ammermans' backyard. The Martins are here. Ammermans are kind of around the corner. Here are their backyards. There's a neighbor in between. There's this vacant lot full of trees and then eventually a drainage ditch. That's where this property is. Mr. Ammerman, on the very back end of it by the ditch, had erected a gate and somewhat of a fence to contest possession within that 30 feet. That was on the backside of the fence that the Martins built. The trial court, in its judgment, where it declared title, directs the Ammermans to remove that fence. That was one of the things they had to go and do, and that was an issue after the judgment because they were ordered not to be on the property, but they were told to remove that fence. So possession was an issue, so we assert, the Ammermans assert, that the Martins did not prove prior possession, that had not been abandoned. And then finally, you could prove it by adverse possession, title by limitations, and that was dropped.
But my point is, none of that fits my example. I don't dispute my neighbor's title, he doesn't dispute mine. The only question is, which state do you mark from? That does not fall under any of the trespass to try title scenarios.
And I think,
surely you can go in and litigate that.
Well, I think, Justice Owen, that's correct, and I think that's what happened in the Plum case. And the court directed us in Plum, look at what the case is about, what the witnesses talked about. In Plum, they just talked about boundary. That was really the issue.
In your case is really, when you go to that, was it concrete marker, or do you go to some other marker?
Well, you've got to get into the case and look at what was the character of the case. What was pled? Title. The Martins pled title. They asked the court to award them title. The court did award them title.
But you're going to get title in a boundary dispute case, too.
Well, in Plum, it was more of about, they just talked more about boundaries. And that's what the court said. You know, this really is just, they're just arguing here over the boundary. Let's declare the boundary. Didn't award any attorney's fees, didn't say you could use the Declaratory Judgment Act to get the attorney's fees. Just said, you don't have to use the formal trespass to try title action. You still have got to show sufficient right to the property. That worked fine in Plum. It did not work here because the way this thing was set up, although it was a boundary, the Martins pled title. They asked for determination of fee simple ownership. The Ammermans pled not guilty. They put the Martins onto their proof to prove their title. And that is what the problem came when it came time for jury submission. The Martins dropped their title cause of action. They dropped the boundary issue wrapped up into the trespass to try title action, which I think is problematic for them because that only left them with a recognition and acquiescence cause of action in the boundary area. But if it was a Plum case, they should have kept it with that trespass to try title cause of action and submitted it to the jury. They got the trial court to let them let's just see which survey is correct, and that's going to determine who wins. And the agreement that is referenced by the Martins is not an agreement by the Ammermans to let that happen. That was an agreement the Martins made with the trial court that if you don't submit the Ammermans' issue on title, we'll agree, we'll stipulate, when all this is said and done, if we lose, we'll deed the property over to the Martins. Again, having to do something deed it back over to the Amerons to show who has ownership, who has title. That is a title question, and that's how this case should have been tried. It was set up that way. It was tried that way. The Martins title examiner stated from the witness chair, Amerons have deficient title. He explained why they had deficient title.
We understand that the attorney fees are at stake. What else is at stake in two ways to try this?
The attorney's fees, whether or not the Martins are entitled to the attorney's fees, which we assert you can't put under Declaratory Judgment Act. Goebbels, Brainerd don't say that.
What else?
Kennedy clears that up. The other thing is ownership. Who proved title to the property? The Amerons assert the Martins dropped their trespass to try title action, regardless if it was just a boundary dispute. It should have still been some kind of title action, just like Plum was. They dropped their
address. I don't think they have title.
The Amerons assert the Martins did not establish title at trial.
So you're saying
Go ahead.
You're saying a boundary dispute only resolves it between the two living parties that go to court. It has no binding effect in the chain of title?
I think, again, I go back to Plum because that's really the only guidance we have in this case. I mean, if that's how the parties want to litigate it, and one party proves sufficient title, what you don't see in the Plum case is what Mr. Stussy's doing. He kind of seemed to have won by accident in the trial court. What he's doing to defeat the Plum's claim, the court says Mr. Plum did all he needed to do. He showed sufficient title. That didn't occur.
Let me try to get very specific.
Okay, I apologize.
Back to my example, you've got two stakes 10 feet apart, and one of them is going to determine where the boundary line is. No one's disputing each other's title. It's just down to which of those two stakes governs. We go to court, we litigate it, we get a judgment. The judgment describes which stake and where the calls will be from, and that goes into the deed records. Now, why isn't that binding on every title holder thereafter as to where the boundary actually is?
After it's been litigated?
Yes.
I think that's an improper way to submit that. I think that the legislature has directed us that that's what you got to do, whether it's convenient or not. That's what you have to do. You have to take it back and go through the trespass to try.
So what does a boundary dispute ever resolve?
Well, again, my examples earlier, I think that's very difficult. And I really think a better way to do it is perhaps if you've already got a boundary agreement and you need the court and you're disagreeing over what you agreed to previously or what your predecessors agreed to, and you need the court to interpret that or to actually enforce an agreement. If you had an agreement and another party's violating, to get them to enforce, that's a boundary agreement. Or if you want to talk about zoning, where do the zoning lines fall?
All right, now, I want to ask you this. Assume that we disagree with you.
Okay.
And that you can try some of these cases as declaratory judgment actions instead of trespass to try title. And we have to worry about which or which. What change does that make in the way the cases are tried, except for attorney fees?
I believe, again, and I hope I'm addressing your question, if the parties are in there and they are fighting over title and they've even gone to the extent that they've tried to prove two of the separate elements you can prove under a trespass to try title case, you got to go back and look at the character of that lawsuit. And if you're actually asking the court, and the court does, decide and declare title, I don't think that that is a proper lawsuit to put in a DJA.
I understand that.
Okay.
But what difference will it make in the way the case is tried, in how you put on the proof, or how you plead it, or anything? What practical differences will there be between the two ways of trying it, other than attorney fees?
Well, if it is a trespass to try title case, or tried like a trespass to try title case, once the defendant says not guilty, the plaintiffs have got to prove their title one of the four ways. If it's just strictly a boundary, plaintiffs can go in there and just prove, hey, I've got title. Not better title, not the title. I've got title, some title. That's all they've got to do, and then it can be over. when you've got the parties actually putting title into issue by a not guilty plea, you've got to go through the steps of the four separate elements of proof under trespass to try title action. It's difficult to grasp, and I've had difficulty in trying to read these cases and understand where the fine lines are. And I hope I've addressed your questions, but I still think you must go back to the character, what was brought, the character of the lawsuit. Then you can decide which way you go. You simply decide it as a boundary and just let the plaintiffs put on some evidence of title, or do you go the title route and have a full-blown who has the best title, who has superior title? And once you do that, if you've gone that route, it is strictly a title case.
Now, in your applying, in your view, was the dispute in the Kennedy Foundation case a title dispute or a boundary dispute?
That was a title dispute. And the court, I believe, said, look at this. What do they really want? They're talking about possession, because who has possession? What really was at issue was the oil and gas. And who had the possession? Who owned it? Who had title? That's what the issue was. And the court said that's what a title case is. Not such as in Brainerd, where the parties agree that they're just talking about boundaries. You've got a very specific area of law with riparian rights, in which there is a subsection of law as how to interpret all that. And they were just trying to see if the correct, which survey applied the correct legal theory, not which survey was technically correct on the ground. That was not the dispute. And the court, I believe it was Justice Hankinson, said that that was simply a boundary dispute.
But it determined who got possession based on where the boundary was.
And that goes back to your example. Is once they set the boundaries, that was possession. But in that case, the court, and the best I can do to analyze that is you got to go back and look at the character of what the parties were fighting over. And
they were fighting over who got to be on that land, whether the public got to be on it or not.
But looking at where the river went,
exactly,
where the Canadian River shrunk, so we get to go, we get additional land. But the way that was tried, the way that was set up, the parties agreed that it was a boundary dispute. There didn't seem to be a title issue. In that case, it was kind of ancillary to the case.
And what was different about Kennedy that made it a title dispute?
Well, Kennedy, they didn't agree it was just a property. They didn't agree it was just a boundary issue. They weren't concerned with which was the correct legal theory used by the surveyors. It was who actually owned that land. You didn't have a situation as much where the Laguna Madre was moving, much like the Canadian River did. It was pretty much stationary, but additional land had been added over the years. And they were actually contesting possession, because who had possession was getting the oil and gas.
It's hard for me to distinguish that from Brainerd.
And because of that, I think it's better and more in keeping with legislative intent to try all these as a trespass to try title action. And when the door was opened with Plum, I think it becomes a character question. You have to look at the character of what was brought to the trial court.
So would you say here that the jury's findings on the surveys are just a nullity? They do nothing? There's no legal consequence to those findings? They couldn't become part of the judgment and establish the boundaries between the parties? Or it does?
I believe that they should not be binding, that there are missing questions that should have been submitted to the court.
Trespass and try title was abandoned, and so there was no, it's as if there was no trial at all.
Well, yes.
I mean, the boundary is still in question. They'd have to bring
the trial court committed error when he did not. The Martins dropped their trespass to try title case. The Martins dropped their adverse possession case.
So in your estimation, is it a it's a non-suited case that could be brought again, or has something been determined by the fact that the trespass to try title was not submitted?
I believe the Ammermans proved superior title. They proved title, regular chain of conveyances from the sovereign to themselves.
Well, as a matter of law, so there'd be no fact.
As a matter of law, I think it could be rendered that
now,
they had
if there
title.
Were a fact question, would there
be? It would be sufficient for remand. And the Ammermans did request, they had a pending cross-claim, they had pled not guilty, they requested a jury question on title. It was refused. The judge said he was refusing it because of this agreement. That wasn't an agreement. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Smith, just one quick question, and it may have been answered, and I may not have been able to hear it. Do you believe these two cause of actions are mutually exclusive, that you can't have one overlapping the other?
Mutually, I don't believe there should be separate ones. I believe there should, I believe if you're contesting title, if title's issued, it should be a trespass to try title action. I believe when the courts of appeal have gone astray from that and started allowing these boundary disputes, I think they opened up the door for a lot of problems that could easily be closed if the property code was followed.
So if these, if the two parties basically tried their lawsuit incorrectly as a declaratory judgment, that would be subject to collateral attack?
I don't think so.
Why?
Well, you're saying if they just decided it as a declaratory judgment action? Because I don't think it was an available means. I don't think it was a proper vehicle to use. I don't think it was a valid judgment, because I think the thing that's supporting it is flawed.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
May it please the court.
Mr. Snyder, let me just ask you, are Brainerd and Kennedy reconcilable?
Yes, ma'am, because Brainerd case was a boundary dispute case, and in dictum, the court in Brainerd acknowledged that a boundary dispute case, if there were no questions of title, could be brought as a declaratory judgment action and in the discretion of the trial court or attorney fee.
I don't mean so much on the availability of declaratory relief as I mean it's hard for me to distinguish why one would be a boundary dispute and Kennedy would be a title dispute. Are they reconcilable on that piece?
They probably are, but I mean, one was a boundary case and one was a title dispute.
Why was Kennedy a title dispute? That's why I'm confused.
Because in a title case, just like in this case, why it was not a title case, in a title dispute case, somebody loses title to, they lose physical possession of property, but they also lose the title to that property. This case is not a title case, because if the jury had determined that the Ammerman's survey was correct, the Martins' description, their title description to their 2.05-acre tract, came from the Kroll tract, and that would not have changed. All it would have done would have moved the line.
But how would the Kennedy case, how would that have affected title? I mean, all we were determining was where the shore of the Laguna Madre was, and that's just a line that's moving on the ground. Why is that a title dispute?
Well, because as I understand it, in that case, in the Kennedy Foundation case, somebody physically, they put title in issue, and somebody physically, by moving the boundary line, somebody physically loses title to property and possession of property. And that's not the issue in this case.
In the Kennedy case, polar ice caps melt, and the oceans rise 3 inches, so that there is a clear distinction between Padre Island and the land. You know, you have to take a boat to get from one to the other all through the year. Then the title's going to change. Ownership's going to change in Kennedy based on the 1804 grant, isn't it?
Yes, sir. That's true.
And in Brainerd, if we all of a sudden undam the Canadian River and farm, you know, let that go back to prairie like the ecologists want to, that title's going to change.
Yes, sir. And in those two cases, I mean, there was an issue of whether it was a title or whether it was an issue of the physical location of the boundary between two titles, where titles, if it's a boundary dispute, titles do not change. And I go back to this case, because in this case, if the jury had determined that the Ammerman survey was correct, it would have established the physical line, Mr. Martin would not have lost title to his 2.005 acre tract.
We wouldn't have had 2.005 acres anymore, and he wouldn't have had possession of the 30-foot strip anymore. So why is it that title to that 30-foot strip?
Because the two tracts never overlapped. And the reason we put on testimony of the predecessors was that the witnesses for both said that these two properties adjoin. Mr. Martin's comes from Kroll. Mr. Ammerman comes from DeVos. DeVos never crosses into Kroll. The Kroll never crosses into DeVos. They abut. They are side by side. So you have to determine the line. Mr. Ammerman's surveyor acknowledged the line of the Martins as being the recognized line. But the determining factor was, where is that physical line located? Title is not affected. If you move the physical line over 30 feet, then that's Mr. Martin's boundary line. He still has title to the same 2.005 acre. There's no title for him to lose.
I want to be sure I understood you earlier. In answer to Justice Owen's question, did you see a policy reason to recover attorney fees in one kind of case and not in another kind of property case? And I thought you answered no.
I should have answered. If I did, I meant to answer yes, because there is a distinction, because simply in a trespass and tri-title case, where the issue is title, the legislature simply has not provided for attorney fees.
I understand that, but then the question was, do you see a policy reason to let it be, for it to be one way and not the other?
Yes, sir. I think Mr. Smith would require that all property disputes be brought as trespass or tri-title. A distinction can be made that if there is, as far as a policy reason, you know, these are expensive cases to try. They're expensive from attorney fees, you have surveyors, and you have title experts. In title cases, there's no damages involved. There's no real property damages. And the loser should have to pay the damages. And one of those damages is attorney fees.
But he doesn't.
In a title case, he does not pay damages.
So you said he should have to, but he doesn't.
He should have to, but he doesn't. In a boundary dispute case, if it's brought as a declaratory judgment, then it's within the sound discretion of the trial court to decide whether or not the loser pays. And there may be circumstances where the loser does not have to pay.
And all I'm asking is, why should, in a perfect world, why should you distinguish as a matter of policy between the two kinds of actions?
Well, because the courts have distinguished and the legislature has distinguished.
But if you were starting from ground zero, you're saying that trespass to title probably has a stronger justification for attorney's fees than a boundary case.
Yes, sir, I do, because I would say that, because a lot of times those cases are brought by a true adverse possessor. There was an amicus curiae brief filed in this case, and that case was brought by a true adverse possessor, and that adverse possessor lost. And in that case, the attorney made the comment that, you know, depending on the outcome of this case, depends whether or not he has to pay attorney fees. And maybe he should have to pay attorney fees because he was the adverse possessor or claimed by adverse possession, and he lost.
Thank you. That concludes today's arguments, and also concludes the service on the bench of Justice Enoch. Spent 22 years and one day as a judge, nearly half of it with our court, and we'll miss him greatly.
Thank you, Chief.